Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Wednesday, May 31st, 2023. A senior South Sudanese official says the United Nations is using South Sudan as an employment hub by prolonging sanctions on the country. And the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, says the clock is ticking on South Sudanese fighting generals.
We have been actively engaged since day one in trying to find a solution. The U.S. government, working with the Saudi government, has held a number of meetings in Jeddah that got the two sides to agree to a ceasefire.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Sudan's military suspended its participation in the U.S. and Saudi-brokered ceasefire talks Wednesday, accusing the rapid support forces of failing to honor their commitment. Nabil Biagio has more for VOA from Washington.
In a statement published today by the state-owned Sudan News Agency, the General Command of the Sudan Armed Forces announced suspension of the Jeddah talks because of, quote, the non-adherence of the rebel militias to the implementation of any of the provisions of the short-term ceasefire and the continuous violations of the truce, end quote. The 7 days short humanitarian ceasefire was extended Monday evening for another 5 days to allow the flow of humanitarian assistance to millions of civilians affected by the 1.5 month long conflict between the rival military factions. The paramilitary rapid support forces also released a statement today saying, despite the failure of the Sudan Armed Forces, or SAF, to cease hostilities, the rapid support forces, RSF, unconditionally backs the Saudi-U.S. initiative. It says the recent SAF violations have not deterred us from honoring our commitments. End quote. U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Linda Thomas-Greenfield spoke to VOA about the influence and diplomatic tools the United States and the United Nations have available to help end the conflict.
We have been actively engaged since day one in trying to find a solution. The U.S. government, working with the Saudi government, has held a number of meetings in Jeddah that got the two sides to agree to a ceasefire to allow for humanitarian assistance. It's still a work in progress. And as the U.S. and Saudi Arabia continue to work on this, we are very supportive of those efforts here at the United Nations. We have had a number of meetings in the Security Council on the situation in Sudan. We support the African Union and IGAD efforts, these regional efforts, and we will keep putting pressure on the two sides to move toward a ceasefire that will allow for a civilian-run government. And that is something that I think has support across the board, both on the continent of Africa, but also here at the United Nations. I am concerned that the fighting continues. I'm concerned with the number of civilians who have died. Humanitarian workers have been killed. Tens of thousands of people have left Sudan because of this fighting. So I have to be concerned until the fighting ends, until the two parties come to an agreement to allow for the peaceful process that was already taking place to resume, where there will be a civilian-run government. The military can't win this on the battlefield. The people of Sudan spoke over a year ago that they want a civilian-run government. So we have to keep the pressure on. We have to increase the pressure until there is a credible ceasefire and a credible way forward.
Since fighting erupted between the rival security forces on April 15, more than 1,800 people have been killed, according to the Armed Conflict Location and Event Data Project. The United Nations says more than a million people have been displaced by the violence in Sudan and nearly 350,000 have fled abroad. The UN says 25 million people are projected to be in need of aid and protection. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
Still on Sudan, intercommunal violence and fighting between Sudanese armed forces and the paramilitary support forces in West Darfur State have intensified in recent days, according to reports. Witnesses who have escaped the city of Al Jenaina say their hometown is being ripped apart. Henry Wilkins reports from Adre, Chad.
It's around 8 a.m. in Adre, Chad, a town on the country's border with Sudan. Chadian citizens are returning from Jenaina, the capital of West Darfur State, which some experts say has experienced more intense fighting than Sudan's capital, Khartoum, in recent weeks. One returnee spoke to VOA just after crossing the border from Sudan. She asked to remain anonymous to protect her family's safety. She says the problem started at the beginning of Ramadan. They burned houses and killed a lot of people. They started on the outskirts of the city and then moved into the interior neighborhoods. They robbed the market. They broke everything, especially in stores and markets. They took everything from them. The returnees say they fled the city under the cover of darkness to avoid being shot. Moments later, horse-drawn carts carrying Sudanese refugees fleeing Jenaina arrive. Sudanese refugee Abdul Anasser Abdallah Adam described how much of the city was affected by the fighting. He says the entire city has been affected. All the military campsites have been burned. There's nothing left. Everything has been destroyed and robbed. All the city facilities have been destroyed, including hospitals, police stations, schools, etc. Fighting between Sudanese armed forces and the paramilitary rapid support forces, which this video purports to show, is tearing the city apart. It's unclear how many people have been killed in Jenaina since the fighting began. Since May 19th, the cell phone networks in the city have stopped working altogether, leading many to worry about the fate of relatives and associates still there. Mathilde Vu of the Norwegian Refugee Council say the aid group fears the worst for its colleagues in the city.
West Darfur has seen very high level of violence over this past month. There's been several attacks. There's been complete mayhem, basically, in the middle of the city with shelling of residential areas, of snipers targeting people. There's been completely burned down of displacement camps, and a lot of people have had to flee somewhere in the city, but nowhere is actually safe.
The population of Jenaina was around 250,000, but tens of thousands have fled to refugee sites in Chad, like Barotta. Refugees say it's dangerous to leave the city and dangerous to stay. So many people simply don't know what to do.
Aliona Sininko from the International Committee of the Red Cross, or ICRC, says the humanitarian situation is dire.
Access to food is getting increasingly difficult. About 3 million people that were there displaced even before the current crisis. So people, they have been through a lot already, and their resilience have been weakened by all these multiple challenges. And now they are facing this new round of violence where they have to flee their homes again.
Many Sudan watchers on social media complain the media attention has focused broadly on fighting in Khartoum, giving less attention to the intense fighting in West Darfur. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Adra, Chad.
Amnesty International has welcomed the United Nations Security Council vote to extend arms embargo on South Sudan. The UK-based watchdog says millions of civilians in South Sudan have suffered human rights violations, including horrific cases of rape and other sexual violence. Nabil Biagio spoke with Shikula Onyala, Amnesty International researcher for South Sudan, based out of Nairobi.
We welcome the decision by the Security Council to extend the arms embargo on South Sudan and targeted sanctions against certain individuals in the country, because this measure protects victims of this gun violence. We have research that has demonstrated that people with guns in South Sudan have used those guns to commit conflict-related sexual violence. And as you will know, the reduction in the conflict-related sexual violence was one of the benchmarks that had initially been set by the Security Council to review this arms embargo. Recent reports by various UN teams that operate in South Sudan have shown that, unfortunately, conflict-related sexual violence cases have continued to go on the rise, and it was necessary that the Security Council sends a message to the government in South Sudan that it needs to take measures to reduce these violations of people's rights. So this is a good move.
The government of South Sudan has been arguing for years now that these renewals of the arms embargo, which was first imposed in 2018, they're saying the arms embargo is harmful and it's unfair. It doesn't reflect the progress the parties of South Sudan peace agreement have made so far, where they have a peace agreement in place, they're trying to implement it, and they're supposed to hold elections in 2024. Now, what do you say to that?
I think the government is not being sincere in saying that they have made some progress. For sure, we've seen some training and graduation of the necessary unified forces. But I think it's just a game they are playing around in terms of trying to graduate them with sticks. There has been no serious commitment towards implementing the benchmarks that were initially set. A report by the panel of experts on South Sudan has shown that the government South Sudan has been having new weapons brought in during the time when they were under sanctions. And this means that the government has had weapons. In any case, the report also showed that the government had not spent a single cent on the implementation of the various steps that were needed to implement the revitalized peace agreement. Most of the things that have been done have only been done because of the support from external actors and the international community. So the government has not shown any seriousness in terms of implementation of the various set objectives towards addressing the violations that happen, generally implementing the peace agreement as it was envisaged. But more importantly, the government has not taken the issue of justice and accountability into you know, seriously, as it has done the other aspects of transitional justice, which are the reconciliation, truth and reconciliation, and reparation. Even though there has been nothing concrete done on that other end, but we could see some efforts from the government. And I don't want to go into that because that is really not our mandate as Amnesty International. But our insistence on addressing the issues of conflict-related sexual violence and accountability, holding people who commit some of these crimes accountable, remains unattended to by the government of South Sudan.
On this very issue, you talk about violations against civilians, sexual violence, and other atrocities committed in South Sudan. The government of South Sudan has argued that now we have the unified forces, we have trained them, we need to arm them and then deploy them throughout the country to enforce security or ensure security, because some of these violations are happening in the context of intercommunal violence and localized conflict. And because of the arms embargo, we're not able to do that. What do you say to this argument?
First of all, the government has enough weapons to deploy these forces. But I just want to correct a notion that some of the violence that we see in South Sudan is localized and somehow there is no involvement of the central government. Again, research has shown that in most cases, this so-called ethnic or localized violence is actually instigated by forces, political forces at the national level. So the national authorities, the leadership in Juba, the leadership from both the government side and the opposition side are responsible for this violence that we see in the various states in South Sudan. If they were to stop, you know, instigating and funding this violence, then there will be no need for us to even ask for weapons. But you will also recall a number of reports that have shown how there's widespread proliferation of weapons, small arms, in South Sudan. Indeed, it is really not localized or ethnic fighting. It is instigated, political, instigated by the leadership at the top.
That's Shukula Onyela, Amnesty International researcher for South Sudan based out of Nairobi. He spoke with Nabil Biagio on Tuesday. Still on South Sudan, the South Sudan government says the decision by the United Nations Security Council to renew arms embargo and targeted sanctions on the country comes at a time when the country is implementing the revitalized peace agreement. For VOA News, Dengai Deng has details from Bor.
The United Nations Security Council renewed an arms embargo on South Sudan on Tuesday for another year amid protests from South Sudan's ambassadors to the United Nations. Russia, China, and three African nations abstained from voting. Deng Dao Deng, South Sudan's acting foreign affairs minister, says the Security Council decision is not fair.
South Sudan have engaged U.S. and the U.N. for us to get out of sanction and arms embargo. We have discussed benchmark. We have worked on them as a country. We have trained the army. We have graduated them. We have deployed them. We have made a plan of action to remove children in the army, and they have been removed. We have the action plan on sexual violence in relation to the conflict. We have signed. We have worked on it.
Resolution 2683 also extended the mandate of the UN's panel of experts on South Sudan to assist the work of the South Sudan Sanctions Committee until July 1st, 2024. The resolution requests the UN Secretary General, in close consultation with the UN mission in South Sudan and the panel of experts, to conduct and check on progress on the defense and security review process, the necessary unified forces, disarmament, demobilization and reintegration, management of arms and ammunition stockpiles, and joint action plan for addressing conflict-related sexual violence. Minister Deng added that the renewal of the arms embargo could create jobs for the United Nations on South Sudan.
These people want to keep South Sudan under this so that the image is kept as a negative image, and we objected to this. These are people who are encouraging war. They want the war to continue. They want to get their people employed as panel of experts for sanctions, as people of human rights. They want just to create jobs for themselves.
Deng says the UN decision to extend the arms embargo came at the time when the country has made what he called significant progress.
President Salva, First Vice President Riek Machar, and everybody are in the same company. We need to be supported for us to be able to get out our country to a viable level where our citizens can have something to do. We can go to agriculture so that people can have a surplus of food production, get used to get employment. This is our issue that we want to look at them for. We want to inform our people to continue doing our things. Let those who are trying to impose their will should not be allowed to distract our mission of the country.
Minister Deng called on friendly nations to support efforts to stabilize the country, including her right to defend territorial integrity. Bol Deng Bol, an activist with the Jonglei Civil Society Networks, welcomes the UN Security Council resolution to extend arms embargo on South Sudan. Bol says the country lacks political will to stabilize the country.
This is a good resolution, extending arms embargo and sanctions on South Sudan. It is good in the sense that when we talk about arms, what do we want to import arms for? What do we want to buy arms for? Yet we have all the arms that are here, and they are not doing any good to South Sudanese. They have all gone into the hands of civilians, and civilians are using these arms against themselves.
Bol urges the transitional government to disarm the civilians to deter intercommunal violence across the country. For VOA News, I am Deng Gai Deng in Bor.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudanese female athletes now have a place to change after hard training. That story is coming up after this break.
If you are in Sudan witnessing events taking place there, or if you have family you are talking to there, you can call us on WhatsApp and let us know how things are going there. Dial the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076. The number again, the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Some South Sudanese who fled the ongoing fighting in Sudan and were transported to Lake State say they are depending on relatives who have no stable sources of income. William Sande Mabor reports for VOA from Rumbek.
50-year-old returnee Chol Marol, who lived in the Sudanese capital Khartoum almost his entire life, says he is finding it difficult to settle in Lagos State because he fled from Khartoum without his personal belongings.
We people who fled from Khartoum, we came back empty-handed. Our lives are miserable. I came to Rumbek and I settled in somebody's house. It is not my haunt. I left all my belongings in my house in Khartoum. We came here and we are hungry. We have no bedding and we have nothing to eat.
Marol says he is worried about some of his family members who are still trapped in Khartoum.
The biggest issue now is the absence of my nephew by the name of John Isaac, whom I left in Khartoum. When the war started, he ran to an unknown location because he was in a different residential area in Khartoum. I tried to call my colleagues in ranks, but they told me nothing. They told me there are too many people in rank, and it is hard to trace missing people there.
70-year-old Tito Mapor has lived in Sudan for the past 11 years. He says he expected a better life in South Sudan when he fled from Khartoum. He says he is disappointed that life is too hard, adding that he is not sure if he will settle in Lagos State. Mapor says he fled without his wife and two children when fighting erupted in Khartoum last month.
When war started, they were in High Yusuf residential area. They were staying there, and I was in another area hustling, doing some manual work to raise some money to buy food for them. So the problems started there, and we did not meet again up to today. I even don't hear information about them. I don't know whether they are alive or dead.
Mapor is appealing to aid international agencies to help him and other returnees locate their loved ones who are still missing. The deputy chairperson of the Relief and Rehabilitation Commissions in Lagos State, Adum Geo, says his agency has so far registered a total of 30 households who arrived from Khartoum and are staying with their relatives. For VOA News, I am William Sande Mabur, reporting from Rumbek, Lagos State.
And now for some sports news. The United Nations Population Fund and the South Sudan Football Association has handed a furnished office and a self-care sports facility to the country's national female football team on Tuesday. The chairperson of the South Sudan Football Association says the national female soccer team never had an exclusive changing room facility during trainings. For VOA News, Juliana Shiapai reports from Juba.
Agostino Madut, chairman of the South Sudan Football Association, says the new facility will attract more women to join the country's national female soccer team, the Bright Starlets.
This facility is going to be an advantage to them because it was not a good thing for them. Sometimes they come and they change in the car. Sometimes they go to the house to go and change. It reduces also the capacity to participate effectively in the football.
Netherlands Embassy in South Sudan donated 4 containers with materials for equipping the new changing room for women athletes in South Sudan. Skipper Marjan, Netherlands ambassador to South Sudan, says her country supports women leadership.
And I think women need space. Women need space not only to flourish and to be equal, but also just physical space where they can change. It's very practical. So words will not do the trick, but it is also the practical stuff that we need. And I hope that with this, it will serve as a role model, this team, the Bright Starlets, for the rest of the girls and women in South Sudan.
The representative of the United Nations Population Fund, or UNFPA, in South Sudan says his office noticed the gap in gender equality and social norms that continues to challenge the young girls in South Sudan. Ademola Olajide says the United Nations Population Fund is working with female soccer players to create awareness about some of the issues preventing women from active participation in sports.
Working with these young girls, first of all, for them to be able to play their sports with dignity. So we've supported them with containers, changing rooms, even income-generating activities, and dignity kits. But beyond that, we're also providing them training in reproductive health. So they become advocates and champions of SRHR, sexual and reproductive health and rights, and also advocating for gender equality. So the society as a whole is able to benefit from the contributions of the men and the women.
Soga Grace is with the Munike Women's Soccer Team and a member of the Starlets for Change nonprofit. She says the new facility for women at Buluk is a great achievement in the history of sports in South Sudan.
Before, the girls used to change in the open, I mean, just in front of the fans, in front of people at the pitch, which wasn't really a good thing. But now they will be having their privacy, you know, because they now have a changing room there at Buluk. Really, we stationed these containers at Buluk is because that is where the national team, the Bright Starlets, that is where they train from. And they also have their friendly games there. And also some of the local games that happen here in Juba for girls, they also do take place there at Buluk. So we chose that because that is like the main pitch for now that can be accessed by most of these girls. So
officials from UNFPA and the South Sudan Football Association says they hope the partnership with Netherlands Embassy will boost women participation in sports and confidence building. For VOA News, I am Juliana Shiapai in Juba.
And that piece from Juba brings us to the end of this show for Tuesday. We now leave you with Genesis the Veteran and the song Sambala Sambala. Listening to Genesis the Veteran and the song Sambala Sambala. I'm your host John Tanza on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. Don't forget to visit voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you miss this program, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. On behalf of our producer Kwame Ofori and our engineer We wish you a good evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
We sing for the nation, you know, in the Sambala style. I don't want a Sambala movement. Stick to your responsibility.